Welcome to Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles. There are some things we desperately need these days. We need to end the destruction of the earth, and we need to communicate with one another to find common ground and to create new paths forward. I've had the good fortune to listen and learn from my guests today as I've joined Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network's team meetings over the past few months. I'm impressed with the entire team, their ability to listen to one another, and their focused intention to fulfill their mission, which reads, Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network is a statewide coalition of individuals and organizations dedicated to preserving the environment while maintaining the health and economic vitality of rural communities. Can't go wrong with that. So,
no.
So I'm joined today with two members of the coalition, Mary Doherty and Lisa Dorr. Both have extensive experience as community organizers and share a love of community and of the earth. Mary's from Bayfield, mother of five, and has served as County Board Supervisor, Photographer Arthur, former Executive Director of Nonprofit and Entrepreneur. In 2015, she successfully led an effort to stop a 26,000 head hog operation in northern Wisconsin. That led to her work for Socially Responsible Agriculture Project, and then as a member of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. Lisa and her husband run a commercial forage operation in the town of Laketown, Polk County. She spent over two decades transforming a defunct dairy operation to a thriving farm, producing grass and legume forages for small protein producers. Polk County still has a strong middle class of agricultural producers and family-owned food processors and retailers. In 2019, Industrial Ag attempted to colonize her community with 30 hog factory farms, slated to sell 1 million hogs a year to China through a slaughterhouse in South Dakota. Witnessing what had happened in Iowa, Lisa united with hundreds of people to stop this hog expansion. I told you they knew their stuff. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Dina.
Yeah. Well, Mary, I'd like to start with you. As the numbers of CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, in Wisconsin is growing, what do you see are the dangers to rural communities? And maybe even explain what a CAFO is.
So thanks, Dina. I'm going to start with what a CAFO is, because it's going to kind of set the important groundwork for all our discussion moving forward. And how Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network defines a CAFO is, it's a factory farm that houses thousands of cows, pigs, and turkeys, or millions of chickens. Millions of gallons of untreated waste are spread on thousands of acres across our rural communities in Wisconsin. All those animals create a tremendous amount of untreated waste manure, and the CAFO owners have to get rid of it. And so that's what we, that issue, that way of doing business creates great risk and dangers to our rural communities, not only in water quality, which is important, but it also, that manure has to move. Our town roads and county roads are getting harmed and busted up by these manure trucks. There are biosecurity issues as it relates to the avian bird flu is something that is percolating in the background. Basically an unchecked risk. We have risks to property values, when those large factory farms move in. What does that do to your property value? What does it do to your ability to feel safe in your home, let your kids go out to play if there's manure trucks rolling by or it smells really bad? It is a whole host of issues that this particular way of doing business foists onto rural communities in Wisconsin. And
yeah.
It kind of, and Dean, I just want to add, and I don't know, we didn't put this in the beginning, but this is an example of what one of the other risks of CAFOs is, just the consolidation and these huge players that are coming on the scene. And I met Lisa actually because the factory farm person that came to my community that we were able to keep out went to her community.
I saw that in the.
Yep. Yep. And so, and they said when, at one of their first meetings at the in their t before their town board, they said, you can't do what Bayfield did. So Lisa called and said, what do y'all do? And that's when our friendship began. And also it really showed that a win in one area is not necessarily a win for all, because these industries target communities that may not know what's coming, may not have the appropriate regulations and ordinances and safeguards in place, and they're just, the word colonizing is a good, well, Lisa, when her in her introduction, that it feels like a colonization of these animal factory farms that no one's asking for. The citizens aren't asking for this.
Right. And then you guys came along and got together, which is an amazing story in and of itself, but then created Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. Well, it merged somehow, right? Can you
Yeah,
talk?
well, so the little two, like about 15 steps back when I the CAFO that I've dealt with up here in Bayfield, that was when I call it 2014, 2015. And I called the folks I work for right now, Socially Responsible Agriculture Project, I called them for help because I didn't know how to fight a CAFO. And through the process of that, I had their support. And then I joined the organization. And when I joined the organization, one of the things that I learned that SRAP had supported in Wisconsin is the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. I'm not really quite sure when it started, but I want to say like 2014. Lisa, if you have a date, I don't have a. I went back to, in my emails and couldn't find the genesis of this group. But so it's been around, I would say, for at least 10 years. And it's always just been a group of a network of individuals and organizations that think factory farming is not good for their communities, and they've joined together to try to grapple with this enormous issue. And so it's had different iterations, different periods of expansion, different periods of kind of going underground and just supporting each other. This past year and a half or so, with the operations ordinance, we've learned at SRWN the operations ordinance is a critical, critical tool in our toolbox to hold factory farm owners accountable to their for their business practices. And once we saw that they didn't like what we were doing, SRWN still provides very important intranetwork support for our groups, but we added additional layer to try to stop any preemption attempts. And so that kind of became our campaign for this year.
Are the ordinances?
Protecting the operations ordinance, and in particular, speaking with the decision makers in Madison to make sure that they do not approve any laws that preempt local control using the operations ordinances for CAFOs.
All right, so let's talk about that that law that was in place, and I think we could just, Lisa, you can jump in here too.
Sure.
The law that was in place, when was it? During Walker, whatever, it was 2016, 20, that the law came in place of that how CAFOs would be run in the state.
Sure. Yeah, actually, goes back to 2006,
Oh, six.
and it was actually a bipartisan law. It's called it's a siting facility law. And it's a very odd state law. It only applies to local governments that adopt it. So it's not across the board. So a local government will adopt this siting law, and it has was written by industry for industry. In fact, the industry lawyers brag about it on their brag page about how they wrote it. And it's really bad for local communities. It restricts how far back you can put, like it says, oh, you can only have a giant hog factory 200 feet from someone else's property. It's really a bad law. So we took a look at that, and at the very local level said, you know what? We need ordinances that will actually protect our communities. So we started to develop local ordinances that are called operations ordinances. And these ordinances look at how the factory is operated. It's not how it's sited. It's not a zoning law. It's not a siting law. It's how do you run this factory? And so it's a very different approach from what the state put in place in 2006.
Okay, and how's that going?
Well, it's really exciting, Dina, because we at this point, three counties have passed this ordinance. Mary worked with the people in Bayfield, Ashland, and Douglas County in far northern Wisconsin. And then in Northwestern Wisconsin, Polk County and Burnett County, we had six towns get together. So the towns in Wisconsin are kind of like Jefferson's vision for what to do when we bought the Louisiana Purchase. So we bought the Louisiana Purchase in 1802 from the French. And Thomas Jefferson had these surveyors come in and cut the whole thing up into 1 mile squares. And the 6 mile squares are called towns. So in Wisconsin, we have this jurisdiction called towns. It's very small. My town only has 900 people. Some towns only have 400 people. And some people think of them as townships. So at the very small 6 square mile level, we have people who come together and said, you know what? We need to have some kind of ordinances over these giant factories. And so we have now passed that in eight towns. And right now in Pierce County, we have about four or five towns looking at this ordinance.
Wow, so that's an interesting little piece of history that you just there that I'm sure most people don't know. And how important it is, this communication. This is one of the things I've really enjoyed about listening into your sessions. You know, I kind of jump on and learn what you're doing. Is your ability to communicate with others, how much emphasis you're putting on that. Like you said, bipartisan. You're using it in terms of the first sighting law, but also just the way you are all approaching your communication with one another. I'd love that to be talked about, you know, how you're finding that.
Well, it's interesting because we live in rural Wisconsin, and the eight towns that have passed this operations ordinance, they're about 65% Republican and averaging 35% Democrat. One of our towns is called the town of Eureka, which I don't know how you could have a better name for a town than Eureka. They're 71% Republican. And they passed this ordinance in 2022, and now the Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce is suing this town. And it's hilarious because they call them a bunch of radical activist left-wing California people, which is just absolutely ridiculous. They're just Wisconsin conservatives. So it's really a joy to work with people from every part of the political spectrum. And we all know that we don't want giant livestock factories. We're looking at a mega dairy in Pierce County, right? They're going to have 8,000 cows, 12,000 truckloads of manure a year driving out of like one driveway, spreading waste. And it's not just manure, it's carcasses. It's all kinds of stuff.
Wastewater.
Pardon me?
It's wastewater, water from the chemicals from the washing the barns down.
And they're going to drive these 12,000 trucks of manure over three counties and 17 towns, about 7,500 acres. So it's pretty obvious that this is not family farming. It's a $35 million livestock, mega dairy. So it's really a really fun and enjoyable process to work with people across party lines.
That's what I want to hear because I know where I live rurally, and I live in a predominantly one would say Republican area, and but I'm finding the need to communicate and finding common ground with people. So what did you do? Did you have like coffee clutches and sit around and you know, how did you come to make
Sure.
it work?
Do you want me to talk about that?
Either one. Either
Okay.
one of you want.
So basically, the way we approach this work is building relationships. So human beings talking to other human beings, and it's really relationship organizing. So you try to look at your common things that you share. And right now, it's really obvious that we share that we do not want our communities taken over by these giant hog factories, mega dairies, and chicken factories. So we really focus on our shared common values. And there's all kinds of things we can disagree on, but we really all agree on this.
Oh, that's great.
So,
That's really
yeah,
good to hear.
Mary can add to that, but
Yeah.
That's the thing that we focus on. And we have had a lot of rallies, folks getting together. And but in our town, everyone knows each other, right? And there's only three, maybe five supervisors, elected officials of these towns. So somebody's cousin is always related, or somebody's ex-wife was married to so and so. And so it's very socially dense.
So Mary, do you want to add in on that?
Just the because I've been community organizing for about 10 years now, and over the course of these 10 years, I've learned that the artificial, arbitrary sorting that we do in our culture is can run very counter to finding solutions that everyone can live with. And so, when I go into a community, I just ask three questions: Who are you? What do you guys value? And then, what are you going to do about it? But the first two, at least, I was getting at, those first two questions are again critical to finding what's common ground. I struggle with that word common ground sometimes because I think that it implies there's. I like the idea of sharing the work. How are we going, if we've defined who we are and what we value, how are we going to share the work of protecting that, those things that we've identified? And like Lisa said, no one wants to have 12,000 trucks going by their house every year. No one wants to have to go outside and have it be so smelly that you're like, I can't barbecue out here. I can't have friends over. No one wants to feel like they are scared because there's 5 million chickens within a half mile and they're seeing on the news all this stuff about avian bird flu. The question then becomes, when we pose these questions of who are we and what do we value, we can answer the questions in a bucket that says, are we really free if we can't be sure that our property values aren't going to be impacted by a neighbor's business decisions? Are we really safe in our homes if we can't turn on our taps and know we can drink our water without fear of contamination? To get into the meat of the issue as opposed to these false constructs of partisanship or positions that we take in our community. And it is what Lisa said, it's relational organizing. It is showing up in your full self and asking questions and listening and figuring out, okay, I think this is the ground that we stand on together. How are we going to share the work to move forward?
Interesting. And very important, this ordinance is not a ban.
No,
And I
absolutely
think
not.
that is a critical issue. You want to address that?
It is simply, it's not a ban. It is so critical that the people understand this is not a way to keep CAFOs out of your community because we understand the state has preempted that through the livestock siting law. When I describe it, I say, this is an ordinance, an opportunity for a community member, the person who wants to open or expand their operations into a mega dairy, hog factory, or chicken factory. We know that you want to be a good neighbor. Will you show us your homework so we know that your business operations are not going to impact our ability to be safe in our homes? Period. We're just asking them to show us their homework. We hear all the time they're members of the community. They've been here for five generations. They're not going to do anything to hurt us. Hurt their community. We're giving them the benefit of the doubt. We're simply asking them to show us their homework.
Right, got it. That's very important. So, if there's a CAFO already existing in a town or a township, how does the ordinance work with that?
Actually, up to this point, all the towns that have adopted the ordinance don't have a CAFO yet.
Oh, so that's a they,
So
well, we can
they're,
figure it out right here and now.
yeah,
How
yeah.
we're going to proceed.
So what the ordinance does is it requires people to tell what are you going to do about air pollution? What is your biosecurity plan? What's going to happen if 8,000 cows die? People almost really don't believe us when we say they're not required to know what to do with 8,000 cows when they die. We had a huge mega dairy in Texas that blew up and 18,000 cows died, and they had no plan of what to do with them. So you put together this ordinance, and then the mega dairy has to tell you, here's what we're going to do about it. So what we found is they don't come into that community because they don't want to tell you what they're doing. And I'd like to think they know what they're doing. In fact, we can't imagine that an insurance company is going to insure a building. We have a building that they're proposing in Pierce County. It's a quarter mile long. The building is a quarter mile long. You got to believe that they have some sort of fire plan, right? Or who would insure them? So,
Exactly.
yeah, but I have to say that up to this point, the towns that have passed it do not have one of these mega dairies or these giant hog and chicken factories, and they have kept them out.
And further, Dina, it's important to know also that since this ordinance is very much grounded in the belief that local folks have the right and the ability to govern themselves, they have that the ordinance is flexible enough for the town board to look at the and set the animal units, which is something that determines how if it's a CAFO or not. They can set that animal unit at a certain threshold that could grandfather in existing operations. The town has complete authority to tailor that ordinance to what their community wants, needs, and values. And so SRW, and we're not advocating for a animal limit, animal unit. That decision is entirely nested within the decision-making authority of the local towns or counties.
Well, I love that answer because that was the answer that I gave our township, and I wasn't sure about it. But
Good job.
this week was the annual meeting. I think before I get into that, I'd like to just tell everybody that you're listening to Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles, and my guests today are members of Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, Lisa Doerr and Mary Doherty, and we're talking about rural Wisconsin and the implications of large go wrong if we don't think about it, if we don't come together and work towards some resolutions. So, getting back to what happened, well, first, I don't know that a lot of people know because I wasn't aware. My chair for my town, he would always say, "You should come to the annual meeting. Come to the annual meeting." But I was like, "Eh, it's just another going to be another meeting." And then I heard you guys talking about the annual meeting, and I said, "Maybe I should check this out." And I read about the annual meeting, and I found out that you can show up, a citizen of that town or township can come with a resolution, and that the people sitting there can consider it and vote on it right on the spot. And I thought that was a really cool thing. So I took the resolution that people can find on your website, sustainruralwisconsinnetwork.org. It's under the toolkit. You have a really amazing toolkit. And I made copies, I handed it out. I took a lot of good information from your website to kind of lay the groundwork before the vote. And the only question that came up was about grandfathered in. What if, because we do have a small, and that was my answer. It was like, well, it's going to be up to the board. It's going to be up to people just making decisions about how it should go. But the fact that we can have some say is so important. So anyway, it passed. So you can add that to your list of
Thank
passes.
you. Yeah, that's wonderful. And Thomas Jefferson is just smiling because that's kind of the Jeffersonian vision of small landowners, what he would call yeoman farmers, who are out on the landscape and producing the food we need to eat. And that whole idea that Wisconsin and several other states have it, that you as an elector or an individual citizen can get together once a year and tell the board what you think.
Yeah,
So
it's
it's a
important.
great process.
Yeah, and I think we all need to become more vested in what's happening. Because ironically, right after that, there was a discussion about the landfill. Now, you guys are up north, but Vernon County is having some serious issues about landfill and what's going to happen. And people are very much at odds about it. I keep saying, well, we should all just use less trash. That would be one thing we could do. But that doesn't ha hasn't caught on quite yet. But so then it was very interesting because the people in the room were able to, they want local control. They started talking about local control, whether it's about the landfill or, Even the county wanting to give us a standardized comprehensive plan. And I knew that that was going to be an issue in my township. And sure enough, it is. It's not, they're not just going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to do whatever the county has decided. So I think we're waking something up. And I give you both credit and everybody on your team, which, as I said in the introduction, I think you have a wonderful group of people
Thank you
working
so
on
much.
it. Yeah.
And going back to that, the team, I just want to harken back to what I said earlier. The Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network has been around for at least 10 years and possibly more. And it's really remarkable. If anyone that has any experience with networks or coalitions, those are tricky spaces sometimes. And it goes to show you how much consensus there is around this particular issue that large scale industrial mega dairies and hog factories do not fit with what we understand rural Wisconsin to be. And the fact that there is a group of people that have stayed in this game for 10 years in a relatively unorganized network where they're just supporting each other, it is powerful. And this issue that we're dealing with now with the operations ordinances is our latest iteration of our work. But the coalition that we have, the network we have behind us, is diverse, and it is inspiring to work with these folks.
And could you name some of the organizations? I know GROW is one, and
Lisa, do you want
Grassroots organizing Western Wisconsin is what you're referring to there.
Right. Yeah.
Then we have the Crawford Stewardship, which is really
Down here in our neck of the
in
woods.
your neck of the woods. Yeah, there's several Wisconsin Farmers Union groups that belong to it. There's the a whole bunch of super grassroots groups like St. Croix County folks concerned about their water, or the Portage County people fighting a CAFO. There's like I think about 40 different very, very grassroots organizations. Then we have some national people like the Sustain Rural Agriculture, Socially Responsible Agriculture Project, and then ELPC, which is the Environmental Law and Policy Center, which is out of Chicago, Midwest Environmental Advocates, which is out of Madison. So it's really, and then there's a lot of just human beings that aren't part of a group. That would be myself too. I don't represent a specific group. So it's all the way from just individuals to very, very grassroots to national and statewide groups. So it's a kind of a unique body of people.
Yeah, and I believe, well, you guys now have become part of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. I'm a board member there, and I'm very happy to have you and to be able to bring your work and what you're doing because it's so important, like it's just so important. And that divide between rural and city, urban and rural. We need to understand what's happening in both places. And actually, and that would kind of bring us to talking about digesters a little bit, because that's something that like even local people aren't really aware of necessarily, and urban people forget about it. So want to talk about digesters?
The factory farm gas. I will say, Lisa might, my experience with digesters is particularly with co-digestion, which is taking landfill waste from, or food waste from, urban areas, sticking them into a digester that's situated on someone's small-ish farm, adding some manure into it, and then spreading this digestate on farm fields. There's one, Vanguard Renewables is the group that I'm familiar with that run these co-digesters. There's one that's in Eden, Wisconsin, that is, I just drove by it the other day. It looks like it's about, I would say, 75% finished, ready to come online. And then there's one in River Falls. And it is a solution to our problem of entirely too much waste, kind of what you mentioned earlier, Dina, like too much trash. We got a problem with trash in this country. And from my perspective and the groups that I've worked with, we see it as a solution that takes highly toxic materials and it spreads them on rural Wisconsin land, basically turning these rural communities into a virtual landfill. PFAS, microplastics, other materials, because we're not the way it works, the co-digestion, you don't really know. The inputs are different every day. And so, for instance, we had a case in Waupaca County, town of Lynd, where we were able to beat it back. They didn't, it was a local town decision that caused the proposal not to go in, which again is just goes speaks to the power of these local governments. There is power at the local level. There is, I mean, at the county level and the town level. And so they were able to keep it out, but they were going to bring in 225 tons of outside waste into this community every day. You know, that's significant. That's multiple trucks. That's what's in this stuff, what's going, what, how is it being in, you know, digested and changed and then spread on the land. There was a case down in the town of Christiana, which is in near Dane County, of a Vanguard Renewable proposal that the town planning commission turned down, so Vanguard left. So just back to, you know, our work of these operations, bringing it back to the operations ordinances and the authority that these towns have to pass protective ordinances or to turn away proposals that don't fit in with their future land use map for their comprehensive plan for their zoning if they have their village powers. So I will say I don't know that much about manure only digesters. I haven't done a lot of work in that. My expertise or my experience is mostly with co-digestion.
Yeah, okay. But that's very honest and fair. And the co-digestion part is really the important piece because it brings in the urban waste,
Yes.
you know, and people need to understand. It kind of reminds me of a story that I heard one time about, you know, where gunpowder came from, right? It came from pigs' dung. That was how it first started. And
Yeah.
somebody said if pigs knew what was going to be the end result of their dung, they would still be constipated.
Yes.
So the hope would be that people will hear this and they'll realize, well, wait a second, you know, I don't want my stuff to go out into our beautiful landscapes and you know, defile the land. And so such
Yeah,
important work.
I know quite a bit about manure digesters.
Okay.
I
Of
didn't
course you
know the
do.
background on pigs though. Basically, they're giant industrial complexes that are being put together because there's a lot of money in putting these things together. We're looking at 35, 40, $55 million complexes, and what happens is the bond salesmen, the lawyers, the bankers, they come in and they'll make a bond sale for like $20 million, right? And the lawyers and the bankers make a $500,000 off that sale. And what's really happening is these big industrial, they're gas factories. So they're taking the manure and the methane and other gases that come off of that, they're cooking it up and then they're collecting it and putting it into pipelines like natural gas. So it's really an attempt by the fossil fuel industry to get huge amounts of public subsidized money through bonds to keep their natural gas industry going. And it is going to further consolidate the dairy world. For example, I'm working in a town where there's guys who are milking 65 cows, right? They want to bring in a mega dairy with a manure digester that'll have 6,500 cows, cost $35 million, and make the bankers and the lawyers hundreds of thousand dollars just on the fees. And the guys who are doing it are like from, they're Texas and Louisiana. They get a Delaware company that's wholly owned by a Louisiana company that's a subsidiary of a Texas company. They're getting $50 million bonds. So it's really a giant industry trying to come in and further consolidate their control. And that's why, personally, and many people who are opposing these digesters, it's just further consolidating our industry. And it's another bipartisan issue. Under President Biden, the Infrastructure Reduction Act earmarked money because they're trying to call this green energy. We're seeing Democratic and Republican legislators and U.S. senators support it. And one final thing about manure is most of the methane is not in the manure. It's coming out of the burps and the farts. So it's a fake It's a fake solution to the greenhouse issue. And I could go on and on about
Yeah,
that.
I mean, it's so, yeah, that's so SREP did the group I
Yeah.
work for, SREP and Friends of the Earth, they put out a report about a year ago now, I think, called Biogas or Bullshit. And it just kind of shows, and the interesting, the I think deeply concerning thing is that there also is in addition to the consolidation, because the manure is what's fueling these things, the renewable natural gas, either with a co-digester or manure only, there is an inherent risk to communities because more manure means more RNG, which means more money. So it not only is consolidation, it's expansion. These people are being incentivized to expand to create more manure. So then the question becomes, when on earth did farmers start farming manure and not milk? And that is what's happening because the manure with this scheme is incredibly valuable, not as liquid gold or whatever they call it for fertilizer. It's to create a false solution to climate change that, when you look at the mechanics of it, is solving nothing but feathering the nests of very, far away business people who are benefiting from this scheme.
Right. And I'm going to go back to the landfill thing because I'm hoping people will be listening to this and being able to extract, because maybe they're like, well, I don't live near CAFO and I'm not working. But the landfill thing, the company that's going to be hauling away our trash is from Canada. And there's already questions and disputes about how that will operate, and how long it will operate. And so, yeah, these are very big questions. And somebody said to me, he said, who would have thought garbage would have become such a big and complicated issue? And it's like, well, yeah, think about it.
Yeah.
When I moved, excuse me, when I moved to the area, the gully was full of trash before we had any of this. So, it's an issue, and we'd have to think about it. Garbage in, garbage out.
Yep, exactly. And that's kind of that is the double-edged sword of local control, in that we have to grapple with the issue, but we also have to grapple with our neighbors and our friends and our family members to figure out, okay, well, this is the water we swim in, and so what are we going to do here? And there's oftentimes these solutions are not simple. They're not often they take years to noodle through, but it's that process of showing up, asking questions, listening for through lines of understanding, listening for spaces where the work can be shared. And it's iterative, it changes, but maybe 3 years, maybe a township approves an operations ordinance today, and then 3 years from now they want to change it. Well, that is what local control allows for. It allows for communities to change and reorient as they want to. That we don't that process is much more difficult at the state level, and I would say nearly impossible right now at the federal level. So it, but when we get down to this local level, there is work and commitment that's required to start that process and to work through it.
Right, and that's exactly why I wanted to have you guys on, to have this, because it is a process and it takes a long time. Just getting to know people. I mean, I'm living in a place for 23 years and I'm still getting to know my neighbors. And I'd like to tell everybody who's listening, this is Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles. And my guests today are members of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, which I highly recommend that you look at their website. It's loaded with incredible information, resources. What happens if there's a runoff or a spill near you? There's a map of all the CAFOs in Wisconsin. Really important information, great toolkit. And my guests are Mary Dougherty from Bayfield and Lisa Doerr from Polk County. What is it? The town of what? Lake.
I live in the town of Lake Town,
Yeah.
which is a lot of towns
Yes.
and a lot of lakes.
Yes.
And one of the things when you're talking about local control is we ended up, this little town with 900 people, being caught up in a global economy, right? We've got a Chinese-owned company, Smithfield, that is owned by billionaires in China and the Communist Party of China, the Chinese Communist Party, coming in and wanting to get contract growers to grow pigs in our little town with subsidies from the US government, to build the plants. So it's really an interesting deal where you've got a bunch of local people talking about a Chinese-owned company with subsidies from the US government. It's a good way to get to know your neighbors.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That comes to a point too, where I know when I first brought this up years ago, about more local control and in an area where people say, no, we don't want zoning, we don't want zoning. But then people are becoming desperate and they need money, they want to hang on to their land. They've taken down all the trees. They've done, whatever they can financially. So I was very happy to see that in your county, you said that people are still holding on to their small farms and it's still successful. And I think that that's another thing that we need to encourage people towards and kind of help along, like how to make these small farms successful. Because people want to live in the country, and they don't want to basically have to sell out. I don't think that's the hope that everybody has. Some people do. They want to cash in. But I think the proof of what you're doing is saying that more people would like to live simply and well, and together. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you bring that up because, after battling trying to keep this corporate ag from expanding or colonizing our neck of the woods, we actually have put together in response to that the St. Croix Valley Food Alliance. And it's an alliance of about, I think we're at about 120, maybe 150 producers. The St. Croix River Valley on the Wisconsin side. And we just recently got a very large grant to do our marketing so that we could build our internal market within our area and also an external market because we're so close to the Twin Cities. So we are doing that with the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And we have these great winter markets that have all these people get together in the winter and buy parsnips and delicious greens that are grown in hoop houses. And I think you have a fair amount of that in your neck of the woods in Viroqua too. But anyway, it was a direct response to, okay, we know we don't want industrial agriculture. How are we going to support an alternative view?
Oh, that's great to hear. That's really great to hear. So we're kind of getting, well, we still have a little bit of time, but what other projects do you see yourselves engaging in that will, and how will you be still approaching these ordinances? I mean, we, you know.
Yeah, the big thing we're working on right now is we have local towns passing these ordinances, and then the Wisconsin Chamber, which is called Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and some kind of fake groups that they set up, they come in and harass our towns and tell them that they're illegal and that they can't do it. And at the same time, they're telling us that these ordinances are illegal. They're in Madison trying to make them illegal. So they're trying to pass a law in Madison banning or preempting any local ordinances over giant livestock factories. So what we're doing right now is trying to get a grasp on what's going on in Madison, because our folks are at the local level. They're trying to work with their town folks. So what we're trying to do is get them to take those stories to Madison. And they tried to preempt our ordinances last year. We had almost 900 people call the governor and ask him to veto the bill, and the Governor Evers did veto it. This year we're trying to get people to talk right to the Senate Chair of Agriculture, the Senate Chair of Environment, and really get those relationships built in Madison. So that's the project that Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network is really focused on this year. At the same time, we are actively working in multiple towns and counties to pass these ordinances.
Yep.
That's great. Did you want to add anything, Mary?
No, it's just to reiterate that this work is nasty. The work to protect, sustain rural Wisconsin, like our website is called, that's a big umbrella, and there's a lot of different things that are nested within that larger effort. One right now is the operations ordinance. The other one we're working on is bringing rural voices into Madison, into these rooms where decisions are made, where frankly, in my experience being in Madison and talking to decision makers, there's a lot of work to be done for them to hear the stories in their head when they're on the floor going to vote for something. That it's not just the story, the voices in their head are not just lobbyists or industry folks. And so that is critical. And then I think as SRWN kind of moves forward and continues our work, we will continue to do as we've always done, is to be reactive and responsive to what our network members want us to be focusing on, what we all want to work on together, what work we're going to share. And so stay tuned, because like I said, we've been around for in excess of 10 years. It's only continuing to grow. You heard how diverse our membership is. I see wonderful things for us in the future. And I just we're starting here, which is looking at local control and then figuring out who in Madison do we need to build relationships with so they can advocate for on our behalf, as frankly, representative democracy is supposed to work that way. So we're going to try to prime the pump.
Excellent. You guys are so inspiring. I hope people are taking this in and starting to consider what they can do to help it along. One thing you could do is share this podcast, and encourage people in your town to consider, just consider it. Just consider the need to be able to have local control, and see what things can grow out of it. I love that you were talking about different food productions and stuff coming about because of that, realizing, the shortfall that could happen without the industrial ag. And I think those things are really possible.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a saying I always tell my community groups is this guy I met in Canada years ago said, "What seems impossible looking forward often seems inevitable looking back." And I give the example of smoking in public places. That was never a federal mandate. It was done at the local level and the just state level. The person who decided that smoking in hospitals wasn't a good idea, I can guarantee you they did not get a parade. No one was like, "You're the smartest person I've ever met." They, there was a lot of pushback. And now you can't smoke in airplanes, hospitals, schools. And at the time when that was first brought up, it seemed it was messaged out as you're removing people's ability to, for personal choice, you're going to kill the American tobacco farmer. And guess what? Here we are. So it took a long time. It took a lot of incremental steps, but it does definitely change. And I believe wholeheartedly that we're in that space here when it relates to what factory farms and their mega dairies and their swine factories are doing to rural Wisconsin, and it's not going to stand.
And the co-digesters,
Co-digesters, all this stuff, all this
the
industrialization of how we feed and care for each other,
ones that, right. And
it is an aberration of what rural spaces are, and I have full faith that it will not stand.
yeah, good for you. Yeah, and this stretches out even into Dairyland Power and their desire to see nuclear again, and how, people are being unconvinced about the cleanness of nuclear power and the necessity of it. So yeah, these are really important topics. And again, I am so grateful that you could take the time and be on the show today and help people, because you're passionate, you're smart, you care. Okay, maybe, yeah, I saw you didn't.
Well, and we're good looking.
You're
Yeah,
good looking.
right.
Especially
Totally.
for radio and podcasts.
Two older ladies rattling some cages. Come on, what's not to love about us, guys?
Yeah, exactly. So people can find you at SustainRuralWisconsinNetwork.org. And any other ways that you want to reach out or any other suggestions?
Yeah, well, the website's actually
I say wrong.
sustainruralwisconsin.org. So, but if you Google Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, you'll find us. But yeah, please come to our website. We got a great toolkit. We have a place for you to sign up that we can move you into our legislative strategy to get folks talking to people in Madison. So join us. We would love to have you.
Yeah, it's a great group. It's really, really, I'm going to give a lot of thumbs up. And so I want to thank you again and all the listeners. I'd like to say that this is what changing the narrative is about. I'd like to bring to you people who are really caring about how we live and how we're going to go forward. And maybe it rattles some cages, as they say, but it's good work. And so I'm going to keep going with it, and I hope that you will share this podcast with your family and particularly farmer friends. I'd like to end with a quote from Mary that I read as I was reading up on you, Mary. I was doing
Uh-oh.
homework. Remarkable things are possible when you find ways to organize. Encourage people to surrender enough self-interest to work towards a common good and focus more on winning and less on being right. I think that's a really great quote. I saw it and I thought, yeah, that's what we all
Yeah.
need.
Well, thank God that was that one. I was like, oh God, what'd you find
What,
over
is
there?
there more? I should.
Who knows? I don't know. Lisa knows. Once I get rolling, who knows what comes out of my mouth. So,
Well, this has been fun, guys. It's really been
yeah.
fun.
Thank
And
you. Thank you so
this
much,
is
Dina, for
great.
your work. Thank you for
Yeah,
your
thank
work.
you. Yeah, we'll catch you another time.
Great.